Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new movie Kubo and the Two Strings hits theaters this weekend, starring Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey. The animated tale follows a young boy named Kubo who tells stories of quests and adventures until one day he's a part of one. It's a movie that takes on storytelling, community, loss, and the afterlife. It's directed by Travis Knight. Knight is the man behind the production company Laika. They brought us the great animated films Coraline, Paranorman, The Box Trolls. Laika has been nominated for several Academy Awards. Knight is not only known for his animation, but for pushing the boundaries of kids' films as we know them. And boy, do they need pushing. Travis Knight is my guest tonight at the big table on Download. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about Kubo. Great movie. I mean, it's really, really great. What attracted you? Because I read that this is a project that started way back in 2012.
Yeah, we've been working on this project for 5 years now. You know, the pace of an animated film is pretty glacial. These things take a long time to make. We take usually the first, you know, couple of years of these things, just developing the story, developing the characters, the world, what the rules of the world are, what are the big ideas that the architecture, the structure of the story can support. And then you try to weave in aspects of your own life to give it meaning and resonance and hopefully universality. I think there's an odd thing where paradoxically, the more intimate, the more personal you make a story, the more universal it becomes.
Right.
And so that's what we tried to do at the studio. But yeah, it's been a long time in the making, a long and winding road.
Well, you know, the movie is so – it's not only a great story and the animation is interesting, but it's also – I mean, and I think you've talked about this too, that you wanted to make it more of a beautiful film, to use animation the same way that film is, where there's these sweeping, grand shots and this animation that just is beyond what we usually see in kids' movies.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is a big epic fantasy, and so if you're going to embrace something like that, you really have to go for it. I mean, at the beginning, we told our crew we wanted to make a stop-motion David Lean film, a big kind of monumental Kurosawan myth in miniature, which is kind of absurd on its face when you know how we make these things. I mean, essentially they're all made on tabletops, these gussied up tabletops in the middle of a crummy warehouse at our shop in Portland, Oregon, and it needed to look like it was lensed on an endless majestic vista. So it's kind of absurd to even take something like that on.
Right.
But that's what the story needed to be, and credit to the crew. They just did an extraordinary job. It looks like it looks like a stop-motion David Lean film.
Mission accomplished. The script, what attracted you to Kubo? Because it feels... you can feel the emotion that comes out of it.
Yeah, I think there were a couple things that attracted me to it. It was, I think both of them basically go back to my childhood, which is fitting since the movie is fundamentally about childhood and family and those connections that we have as children and as we become adults. You know, for me, I was an enormous obsessive fan of big epic fantasies when I was a kid, and that was a gift from my mother. In fact, when my mother was pregnant with me and when she was recovering in the hospital after I was born, the book that she was reading was Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. So that love of fantasy was something that was bestowed upon me at an early age. Incidentally, a big geeky love of Tolkien is not something that endears you to the ladies.
Right.
Something I was going to find
out
in high school. I found out that hard fact the hard way. But I've loved fantasy my whole life. And, you know, my dad, for his part, when I was around 8 years old, you know, he let me tag along on one of his business trips to Japan. And I grew up in Portland, Oregon. And from the moment I set foot in Japan, it really was like I'd been transported to another world. It was just so unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. It was just beautiful and breathtaking, almost otherworldly. And, you know, everything from the food and the style of dress to the music and the movies and the TV shows and the architecture. I mean, everything about it was a revelation. And it was the beginning of this lifelong love affair I've had with this great and beautiful culture.
I was going to ask, I mean, you know, to put together an epic adventure fantasy like this that takes place in Japan, how much do you have to do? How do your crew in Portland, Oregon have to know necessarily about the cultures, about the landscape, about the environment?
It's really important that you do your research, that you understand the world that you're stylizing, because even though it is a period fantasy, it's a fairy tale, but you want to make sure that your fairy tale has one foot in the real world, that you understand what you're stylizing. And so we do, for the first part of the process, those 2-3 years where we're developing the story and the script and the characters, we're also doing tons and tons of research and just making sure that we understand that era and that time. And so the film really is a loving homage to this incredible culture and artistry that comes from Japan.
You've had a great relationship with Focus to put these together. This you talked about this being an opportunity at this stage with Laika to attract big stars, to get people involved in your film. Is this the right project for that move for you, to have this sort of Matthew McConaughey star in the project?
Yeah, it clearly was. I mean, you know, we are, you know, we're nestled in the rain-drenched, patchouli-oiled armpit of the Pacific Northwest. And so anytime anybody wants to work with us, it's a bit of a shock to me. And so we aim high. I mean, we want to work with the best, finest talent in the world, some of the best actors on the planet. And so when we started approaching, 3 years ago, when we started approaching Charlize and Matthew about being involved in the movie, it was, on a prayer. You're crossing your fingers, hoping they'd be interested. And thankfully they were. And I think that really speaks to what is at the heart of the movie. It really is fundamentally a movie about family and about parents and their children. And, you know, for Charlize, she was a new mom at the time, and she wanted to do the kind of story that she could share with her child. And for Matthew, when we sent him the script, he actually read it in nighttime installments to his kid as a bedtime story. And so I think the thing that attracted our actors to the movie is the same thing that attracted me to make this movie, which is it's just a beautifully told, rich tapestry that fundamentally is focusing on, love and family.
Do you, as a filmmaker, as you see the evolution of the films that Leica has been involved in, do you look for a change in direction, or is it adding on what you've done before?
Yeah, well, I think that if you look at all of our films, there is a continuum. I mean, there are strands of the same DNA that runs through all these things, because it comes from the same place, the same community, the same group of people. But we always want to tell new and different kinds of stories. We don't want to repeat ourselves. There's an inherent restlessness at Leica where we always want to challenge ourselves creatively to tell new and original stories, to tackle new worlds, to dive into new genres. That gets us excited. We don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again. And so I think if you look at all of our movies, they're all very different from each other, and we love that. We love creating new worlds.
Let's take a break. I want to come back, and I want to talk about the emotion in the film, because that's the one thing that Leica has brought to animated features, is just this emotional response. I remember having an emotional response myself to Coraline, and the same here, where there really is a lot going on for kids who are going to watch this movie. Travis Knight, the CEO of Leica and also the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio at the big table, Travis Knight. He's the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, which hits theaters this weekend. The movie, it's a great movie. I really enjoyed it. And, my family's always been a fan of the work that you guys do, because it's not, I guess it's complex.
Yeah.
It's emotionally complex.
Right. I think that, we're not interested in making little pop culture confections. We're not interested in making, candied coded things that go down easy. We want to tell stories that have resonance, that are thought provoking, that are thematically challenging, that are emotionally resonant, that actually mean something. We pour so much of ourselves into these movies, and we really want it to matter. We want to make movies that matter. And so with each film, I think one of the benefits of working in something like fantasy or with animation, it's a stylized view of the world. It has a nodding acquaintance to reality, but it's not reality. And I think when you abstract from reality, you can actually explore meaningful issues in a way that's stylized that kids can get, they can appreciate, they can understand, and yet it kind of defangs it a bit because it's not the real world. What you're looking at is a stylized version of the real world.
I guess the similarities between characters like Kubo and the character in Paranorman, or even Coraline, they're the heroes. They're in this moment. They have a lot of adversity to overcome, and they're almost doing it in a fantasy world, even inside the movie. Mm-hmm. But talk about setting a movie where the child is the hero and has to overcome adult kind of loss, emotion, things of that nature.
Yeah, I think the starting point is that we make films that are intended for families, and when we say that, we mean all members of the family. We don't mean that we're pandering to toddlers and the parents are going to turn off their brain
exactly.
And just hope they can endure this hour and a half. We want to engage all members of the family. And so that means, we try to have stuff that are for the kids. This is big action adventure element to this movie that's really fun. It's kind of like an Indiana Jones adventure that's fun to watch. But there's also an exploration of big ideas and deeper issues that hopefully appeal to an older audience. And so, yeah, I think that, by putting a child protagonist, sometimes the tendency is to try to water it down, to make it palatable for a younger audience. But that is, I think that does our audience a disservice. I think kids are smart. They're sophisticated. And when I think about the kinds of stories and movies and books that I loved growing up, it was always those movies that treated the audience intelligently.
Are you a study of children's movies? Do you pay attention to the stuff that's come before you, the stuff that, that's your contemporaries?
And, you know, certainly things that, that I loved growing up, and then I see the things that my own kids are exposed to. I have three kids myself, and in fact, one of the main reasons why I even started Laika 10 years ago was exactly that reason when I became a parent. And I became a parent, as most of us do when we become fathers and mothers, our perspective changes. We start looking at the world in a different way through a different prism. And when I saw the kinds of things that my children were exposed to, when I saw, you know, the things that passed for family entertainment and how so much of it was vapid and it was just a sensory overload.
You definitely are a dad with kids, right?
That's life.
I mean, if you watch anything from the stuff that's being presented on television, yeah. I mean, there is sensory overload is a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, and I just didn't want to be a part of that. I wanted to make films that mattered. I wanted to make films that had resonance, that kind of stuck to your ribs. And you know, those are the kind of things I loved growing up. So that really was the impetus to start Laika to begin with 10 years ago, being a parent. And now, you know, making this film and making a movie that's fundamentally about family but has as a child protagonist, we wanted to make sure that we treated him like a real kid and that we didn't pander, that we didn't speak down to our audience, that this is a kid. He's going through this issue in his life. He's crossing that Rubicon from being a child to becoming an adult. And, you know, there are beautiful things that we gain along the way, but there's also some things that we lose. And I think this is in a stylized way, we can talk about those things in a way that kids can understand.
And that's what I love about it, the movies that you've produced. The other thing, too, is have you ever been in a situation with Laika where there's some themes, some storylines, some things you want to produce that might just be too much for kids to handle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, undoubtedly. I mean, look, I know that I'm sure that we've soaked more than a few bunk bed mattresses in our day. That's never the intent. We're not trying to traumatize anybody. I mean, ultimately, what you're trying to do as filmmakers is you're trying to bring people together. I think that's what storytellers mm-hmm. long to do. They long to make those connections with people. They long to, you know, to kindle people's imaginations, to inspire them to dream. And, you know, that's what stories meant to me. And so that's what we try to do with our films. You know, sometimes as you're developing these stories, I think that, you know, we always try to find that artful balance of darkness and light, of intensity and warmth, of humor and heart. You know, we think that just makes for good, engaging, enriching storytelling. And I personally believe that spending time in the shadows makes the light even brighter and more beautiful.
Well, that's interesting, because I would say that's a big part of your work. I mean, a lot of the work is sort of in the shadows. There's an emphasis on the afterlife. There's an emphasis on the other side. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting for an adult to be and watching. You know, I'd bring my 7-year-old, 6-year-old to to see Paranorman, and I'm like, yes, I'm starting to learn something here. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable here, but there definitely does seem to be at least an interest or a specialty in playing in the shadows.
Yeah, and I think that it's just a matter of finding the balance. I mean, I think one of the things about this movie that I love is that even though we explore some important issues, there's a joy to it. It really is a joyous film. It's a beautiful film, and it's uplifting. And, you know, when I think of my favorite film-going experiences as a parent, as an adult, there are always those moments where I take my kids to go see a movie, and then on the ride back home, we're talking about it. We're talking about the issues that were raised. And, it, you know, it's an opportunity for engagement. It's an opportunity to bring families together to talk about things that matter to them. And I love those kinds of experiences. And those are the kind of movies that we want to make. We want people to be engaged with it and then talking about it as a family. I think those are beautiful moments.
There's a lot that has to do with storytelling in Kubo. That's what I really like. There's even a line I paraphrase. It's sort of like stories live from one person to the next to the next. It's almost in a way that, you know, that our world is changing and so much technology, you really harken back to nuts and bolts of what it means to celebrate history. Mm-hmm. The idea of telling stories from generation to generation to generation. Are kids getting that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that is a fundamental part of who we are as people. I mean, it's kind of in the bones. It's in the DNA. My youngest son is 3 years old. And sometimes I'll just watch him from across the room when he's playing with his action figures, his little superhero dolls and all that kind of stuff. And he's creating these whole scenarios. He's doing the voices. They're going on these little adventures. And I'll just watch what he's doing. And what he's doing is he's storytelling. He's telling a story. Mm-hmm. And nobody taught him how to do that. That's just something that comes out of us naturally. And I think that is a fundamental part of what it means to be human. It's a beautiful thing. And I think it gets to what we try to do as storytellers, to kind of reach people, to create empathy. And I think that's what stories in their finest form do. Yeah, I think there is still a huge part, an important part that stories have to play in our lives. And it is a very fractured world that we live in, a very high-speed world. But I still think people long for those kinds of connections.
It's funny because, you know, you wonder if there's a part of us that are longing for new stories. you know, or at least to be around something that's unique and interesting and different. And I think that as we start to learn different cultures, and that's where Kubo and the Two Strings mm-hmm. plays, this idea of almost learning the folklore of a different culture, mm-hmm. of understanding where Kubo's from, his parents, his, you know, the it's a different period, things of that nature. It's just, it intrigues us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that art is one of the few things that can cross barriers, that can break down barriers. You know, art can speak to us across time, across place, across culture. You know, one of the key influences on this movie was Akira Kurosawa, the great master filmmaker. And he, interestingly enough, he was greatly influenced by William Shakespeare, who lived on the other side of the planet 400 years before Kurosawa was even born. And I think that speaks to what art can do. It can, across time and culture and generations, it can speak to us. It can reach a part of us that we don't even know exists. I think that's a beautiful thing that, you know, that storytelling can do, that art can do. And, you know, it's fundamentally what we try to do as filmmakers. And I think that, you know, we live in an era of, you know, regurgitated stuff, right. franchises right. and brands and reboots and remakes. I mean, it's constant. That's really all
We've
the only
told,
kinds
we,
of
stories. Yeah, there's only a certain amount of stories that work, and we're going to tell them so many times.
Right. And it's a shame because I, you know, some of my formative experiences as a kid, I would go into a darkened room, a cinema with a bunch of strangers, and I would see a new world on the screen, and that was always really exciting to me. And I think film still can be that, but it's we don't see that very often. And I think that with Kubo and the Two Strings, we are absolutely taking people to places that they haven't been before.
Travis Knight's the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, also his production company, CEO of Leica. Let's take a quick break for the news. We'll come back and we'll continue the conversation here. I want to find out more about your approach and philosophy to animation, because one of the things we haven't even mentioned is Kubo, Paranorman, Coraline, down the line, Box Trolls. It is unique in the way that you're moving animation forward and not just relying on what's out there. So we'll talk about that coming up after the news with Travis Knight. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Travis Knight, he's the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, which is out this weekend. Also the CEO of Leica, the production company that paired with Focus Features to put this out. The animation, it really is, you've pushed the boundary. We talked about the idea of trying to make it more filmmaking. Mm-hmm. These grand sweeping shots, these amazing, some of the stuff that's done through the imagination is just great. Where does that come from on the animation side? There's a real different, this is 3D by the way, but there's a real push to try and change the status quo.
Yeah, I mean, I think this film really does represent a seismic shift, certainly for us as a company. I mean, we've never taken on anything even remotely this ambitious before. You know, the way we make films is really unusual in this modern age. I mean, everything is digital these days, but we actually make these things by hand. The basic form of the way we make these movies is in stop-motion animation, which is a technique that goes back to the dawn of cinema, you know, 100 years ago,
right.
to when Georges Méliès was sending rockets to the moon. We use a lot of those same techniques, but at the same time, we also blend that with technology and with science and craft and art, and all these things are converging. It's a big roiling gumbo of all these different techniques, and I think visually, aesthetically, that gives audiences something that they've never seen before. It's honoring tradition and history while looking towards the future and doing disruptive innovation to make these things come to life.
What first got you into animation?
Oh, boy. you know, I've loved animation since I was a kid. I don't think that makes me unusual. I mean, I think most kids do love animation, but I was a very special kind of child, and I absolutely adored it, and I wanted to learn how to do it. And so I tried tinkering around in my parents' basement or their garage, just trying to figure out how I could do it myself. There was just something so much that I loved about those Ray Harryhausen creature features and the Rankin-Bass Christmas specials and things like that. I just thought it was so cool, and it was with something I was mentioning earlier. I think it's evocative of when you're a kid, that primal thing is where you're bringing a child's beloved plaything to life and the inner life that you imagine these mm-hmm. things have. I think stop motion has that kind of quality. It has this magical charm that's difficult to find in other forms.
But I mean,
media.
For you, I mean, the opportunities to get into animation, you could have gone any which way. What drew you to stop motion? What drew you to this classic historic art form and wanting to build on it for the future?
I think it's just because I'm weird. I don't know.
It's honest.
It's just so cool. I mean, I think there's really nothing like it. Now, you know, when I started getting into animation, CG didn't exist. I mean, this is back in the 80s where, you know, CG was just in its infancy at that point. But, you know, with the 90s, when I started doing this professionally, that's when we really started seeing technology in the computer in its ascendancy. And it kind of, it basically undermined every other form of animation there was. You know, hand-drawn animation started to go away. Stop motion definitely went away. And so by the time that we formed Leica 10 years ago, you know, stop motion was, you know, it was on life support, and someone was really ready to pull that plug. And so that's when we decided that we've got, if we, this medium that we love, we've got to find a new way to reinvigorate it, to bring it to a new era. And so both in terms of our storytelling and our production techniques, we really wanted to do something new and different. And that was the beginning. And that's when we started on Coraline. And it's been, you know, ever since we've been doing this.
You know, an audience that's going to come out to your to movies, families and children, kids, they're inundated with animation.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, there's a lot of it.
I mean, just think about the technology and the ability for, not just with films, but with TV and other places, to just to see it. So do you ever feel like you have to keep up with that for kids to feel like they're getting something that, ooh, this is the best, I've never seen this before, as opposed to, you know what, I can get this on Cartoon Network at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Well, I do think that we want to give audiences new experiences. And so, you know, we're certainly aware of what else is happening out there. And you're right, there's a ton of animation. There's more animation now than that's ever been. But I don't think there's animation like the kinds of stories that we make. I think that the kinds of stories we make are very unique. The fact that we're based in Portland, Oregon, it really has allowed us to evolve independently to make this culture, you know, outside of all the major film hubs. And I think that's made us, one of the things that's made us so unique. And it means that the kinds of films that we make have a unique perspective. And I think that, you know, it doesn't really matter for us what other people are doing, because we're telling, if you know, new and interesting kinds of stories in different genres. And I think people get excited by that.
Do you see a future for your company where you may change the audience, where it's not families, where you go to adult stuff, use the stop motion, the 3D, the technology that you're creating, the animation that you're creating to try some rated R stuff?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think I'm excited about telling different kinds of stories in different genres. I think, you know, animation sometimes gets lumped into one, you know, people see animation as a genre in and of itself.
Right.
It's really not any more than live action is a genre. It's just a way to make a movie. It's a powerful visual medium that you can use to make a movie. And so the genres that you explore, the story that you explore within animation, I think that's really exciting. That's where you can take it into different avenues. You know, everything that we've done to this point has been geared towards family. Now, I do think that our definition of family is maybe a little broad, you know, compared to some other,
sure,
you know, definitions of family. And I think within that spectrum, sometimes things will be geared more towards, you know, more appropriate for younger members of the family. Sometimes that might be more older members of the family. And so I could certainly foresee us doing something that's way different than anything we've ever done before. And in fact, we're developing just that right now.
As I think about, we talk with filmmakers, and a lot of filmmakers will come on and talk about the movies made or broken in the editing room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ira Glass was just on talking about Don't Think Twice, and Mike Birbiglia's movie where it was just all about they made it all happen in the editing room.
Yeah.
For an animated film,
yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that, right?
No,
so how does it work? I mean, you pretty much have to set out what you want to accomplish and execute it.
Yeah, you got to be really disciplined. I mean, we put a lot of effort early on to just getting the story and the characters right before we do any animation at all. And in fact, you make the movie before you make the movie. We do the entire film in storyboards before we shoot a single frame of the movie. And you put temp voices on there, you put temp music on there to try to see if it plays. And if it doesn't, then you'll rework things in storyboards. And that's the way effectively you can shoot coverage and quote unquote find it in the edit bay is by, you know, doing it in storyboards before you actually go out and shoot it. But once you're committed to shooting it, that's it. You can't shoot, you know, everything that you shoot is going in the movie.
Does that make it harder as a filmmaker in 2016 to not only be able to do this kind of work, but to recruit the kind of people that want to do this kind of work? Because filmmaking is now changed in the way that you can go into an editing room, you can change, you can fix the problem. This is a much more dialed in, specific kind of art form.
I think it just requires extraordinary discipline. And it's just, you know, on the one hand, it's incredible imagination because you're imagining these entire worlds. You're bringing these things to life in new and interesting ways. And so that's really exciting. On the other hand, you have to balance that with this amazing discipline where you know exactly what you're going to do and you structure it and organize it in a way that you can actually pull these things off. You know, particularly when you're trying to do these things for a budget. I mean, our films are a fraction of the cost of, you know, say a Pixar or a DreamWorks film or something like that. And so we got to make sure that we're putting all our resources on the screen, that we're not wasting it. And so we do that. I think that a place like Leica and a place like Portland where we're based, it draws the same kind of person. People that are a little weird, people that are a little, you know, left to center, people are kind of like, you know, Portland is kind of an island of misfit toys anyway. And we're an island within the island of misfit toys. And so I think that it can be hard to recruit some people, but I think people are naturally drawn to what we do based on, you know, their awareness of what we do.
The director of Kubo and the Two Strings, Travis Knight, my guest tonight. Kubo and the Two Strings will be in theaters this weekend. He's also the CEO of Leica, the production company in Portland, Oregon. Keep making great films. Congratulations on the success of this film, and we hope to talk to you sometime again.
Thank you.